Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey of the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned. Welcome to this edition of Expanding Your Faith. I'm Bishop Greer, and joining me tonight is Bishop Ben.
Hello, everybody, and greetings to everybody.
I hope everyone has had a good week, and thank you, Bishop Ben, for joining us tonight. Tonight we're shy Reverend Mark. I want to mention that for those that enjoy listening to his docile tones. He had something come up and could not be with us tonight. Unfortunately, you have to listen to me and Bishop Ben, but it won't be too bad, I don't think. Tonight we're going to talk about the anatomy of an ethical crisis.
Yep.
And
there you go.
So we're going to Bishop Ben suggested this topic, and it kind of came out of some events that happened in your life this week, Bishop Ben. So I'm going to let you kind of describe, if you want to, if you feel you can, some of the high points, and we'll kind of take it from there, okay?
Okay, well, you know, as people know, you know, me and you do emergency chaplain stuff for the hospitals and nursing homes. And there's many occasions where we get into this, what we call an ethical dilemma, where things come across where it may be personal, you may know the person, you may know the situation too intimately, and it comes across to how do you handle that situation and deal with it ethically and not have it affect you personally or affect the person you know personally. Right. And that's where it comes into a big dilemma. And for me, it was a situation at the hospital that a family came in. I happened to know them very, very personal, very closely, and knew intimately the inner workings of the family. You know, and it comes down to the patient being physically abused.
Right.
In those cases, you know, you sit in cases like that, you sit there and think, what do you do as a chaplain, as a paramedic, and as a mandated reporter?
Right.
How do you handle those kind of ethic crisis ethically without crossing boundaries?
Right.
And a lot of clergy come to that throughout the U.S. I have discovered a lot of people in my area have conundrums like that. And it's like, how do you manage them? What do you do with them? And,
right.
You know, there's a lot of ins and outs and nuances to go with that.
Right. Right. Well, and having been in hospital chaplaincy too, you know, I've come across those situations where, you know, we have a patient come in, there are obvious signs of abuse or neglect, usually from nursing homes or long-term care facilities. And, you know, a lot of the times nurses and doctors will tend to kind of look the other way, as it were. Because it's such a common occurrence, and not to mention the fact that, you know, these facilities tend to be understaffed and overpopulated, and so they don't want to cause waves for the staff at the facilities, but by the same token, these are human beings that we're talking about. And so, you know, I've filed numerous reports with compliance officers and with the state over the treatment of patients in these types of facilities, and knowing full well that it's going to cause a great disturbance in the facility. But then again, this is a human being who's being mistreated and neglected, abused
Correct.
And neglected. And
you
so
know,
if this patient who is lucid enough to explain that they're being abused is being treated like this, then how badly are the people who can't speak up being treated?
Being treated, exactly. And you know, the thing that comes down to that is you look at the situation and you try to tear it apart to think, you know, who is this reporting going to affect? How is it going to affect not only the facility, but how is it going to affect the family members that are involved? How is it going to affect other patients that can't speak for themselves? How is that going to affect their care or lack thereof? You know, there's a lot of nuances that go into that, play into that.
Right.
You know, and you had to sit there and you think about, should I or shouldn't I? You know, it's
right.
A big dilemma that plays in your mind.
It's a heavy burden. And I mean, the reality is I've had a few family members get angry at me for reporting neglect and abuse, mostly because it's going to inconvenience them.
Exactly.
Their loved one may be removed to a different facility, and it may be further away, or it may be a facility that has different visiting hours that they don't like, or, you know, whatever, because of what's happened. A good example of this is Father David Jennings, one of our priests in the OCCI, was in a care facility in Louisville, Kentucky, and he was being horribly mistreated by staff. And numerous reports were made over several years' process trying to get, you know, things fixed. And eventually the company that ran the facility decided to close the facility down with almost no warning.
Wow.
And so it caused a great inconvenience, having to find places for all of those patients. But ultimately, all the patients got moved to facilities that provided much better care. And the staff treated the patients better at these new facilities. And so while that was always a possibility, that they would shut down, that wasn't necessarily my goal or the goal of the other family members who complained. The goal was to, you know, make sure that their loved ones got better care, you know, that they weren't constantly battling bed sores and mysterious bruises and mysterious cuts and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately it was better that the facility closed down and that they went to other better facilities than to continue trying to fight against a facility and a company that did not want to change. They did not want to improve. That's part of that ethical conundrum that we face, because it's kind of the law of unintended consequences. We don't know what's going to ultimately happen.
Exactly.
When we make these reports. But what we do know is that it behooves us to speak out. Forget clergy for a minute. As human beings, when we see another human being suffering, another human being neglected and abused, we have to speak up. And so therein lies one of the great conundrums that we face. The other great conundrum that so many clergy face across the country, we're going to dive in here head deep.
Why not? We got plenty of time to do that.
is the fact that so many of us are barred by ethics and morality and mm-hmm. our religious doctrine and dogmas when it comes to things said in the confessional.
Correct.
And that has long been a bone of contention amongst most people in the public, dating back centuries. I mean, this is not a new issue. This is something that's been around for centuries. And there are good clergy who are faced with these ethical dilemmas of things that are told to them in the under the seal of the confessional that they now have to carry with them because they are bound not to reveal what is said in the confessional. And a lot of people take exception to that. A lot of people, that angers them and frustrates them. The fact that we maintain that seal of the confessional. I understand that. I really do. By the same token, it is something that is sacrosanct and it has been for centuries. It is one of the few things that we have no wiggle room on. You know, if something is told to us in the confessional, we have to maintain that that secrecy of it. That doesn't mean that we have to let somebody continue to be abusive to others. It does mean that we can't necessarily go to the police about it. We can't go to the authorities, but we certainly can do everything we can to try to protect people who may very well be affected. And there should be, and there are in many cases, like in our church, there are ways around that in a way that doesn't violate the seal of the confessional, but also protects people from being abused. And so, for instance, if something is said to Bishop Ben in the confessional by a priest that he's committed a crime, Bishop Ben can come to me and talk about it under the same seal of the confessional. And then I can remove said person from ministry. And more often than not, that information doesn't come to us in the confessional. It comes to us in other ways that we can act upon. But there are rare cases where it comes to us in the confessional and that we have to find ways to deal with it in an ethical manner while still protecting people. And it is not
You know, it's
easy.
funny. You know, it's funny that I had a, well, you know, that a lot of people know this, that I used to be a presiding bishop at the New Catholic Church several years ago.
Right.
And during that time of me being a presiding bishop, I had a big ethical dilemma that came in my lap. And you know what happened? You know, we had a priest that was accused of child molestation. And I
Right.
had to sit there and think about, you know, how in the hell am I gonna deal with this? You know, what am I gonna, how am I gonna put this into action? What am I gonna do with this clergyman? How am I gonna handle the whole situation? But then he came to me and asked me for help, and I said, how can I help you? You created this mess on your own.
Right.
It's not my problem, but on the same token, it was my problem because I was his presiding bishop.
Right.
So I had to deal with it. So there came that problem of another dilemma of like, how do I deal with this situation as a presiding bishop? So I ultimately removed him from the church and let the police deal with him.
Right.
I had
Which
no
is, of
choice.
course, our policy is that we remove them from service and turn them over to the authorities. And let the authorities deal with it. In some ways, canon law, which is the law that governs the church, how we do things, how we operate, can be very helpful. Because canon law helps to remove some of those ethical conundrums. because it lays out the steps we have to take. And so we, if we follow those, then we're protecting not only the people in the clergy person's sphere of influence, but we're also making sure that that person is held accountable.
Correct.
So it helps to remove some of the ethical considerations from the shoulders of the priest or bishop by setting up guidelines that must be followed. And even if that is a false allegation, a provably false allegation, we still follow the same procedures.
Correct. We have to.
And, I have had that situation before where we had a provably false allegation made against a clergy person, and we enacted the plan, allowed the authorities to investigate. Turned it over to the authorities, allowed them to investigate, and they came back and exonerated the clergy person. And then we also investigated and found zero evidence. In fact, we found evidence that the clergy person was in a totally different place at the times and dates that supposedly they had
Been accused of.
committed these acts. And so it was video evidence that said they weren't even anywhere near where these this act supposedly occurred at the times and dates given. And the person who was making the complaint was very adamant the times and dates were accurate. So, with that evidence in hand, we were able to say that, this did not happen. There was just no physical way it could happen. And then you deal with the ethical issues of people that decide to go public about it and throw a fit, even though they know that it's not true, they know that it's made up. And that's a whole nother ethical issue because, you want to defend the clergy person who's been cleared not only by the authorities but by the church. But by the same token, you also understand that there's something seriously wrong going on here inside the individual. And so you don't want to cause any damage or harm to them either.
Of
And
course not.
so it really ends up being difficult because you have to balance what do you say, how much is too much, how much is not enough. And we dealt with that. Over about a year period, and the parish lost about $500,000 in revenue, lost a bunch of people who believed the lies. Now, a lot of them have come back now, but it really damaged the parish, it damaged the clergy person, even though it was demonstrably false. But we didn't want to go out there and lambast the person, a this
Of course not.
person lied, and so
And
it's
see, you have to wonder at what point too, like the problem, they leave and they come back. Is it ever the same? You know,
right.
when they left, and can they ever regain what they lost and what they destroyed when they left?
Right. Very true, and in some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. It really
No,
depends on how much
exactly.
damage they did when they left as to whether or not there's any hope for that to be, different, or to be not different, but to be the same again and not be different.
And see, also too, you have to look at that situation too with not only do us clergy people, like even like Reverend Mark, I'm sure, has encountered this. Not only us, do we have ethical dilemmas. People in the civilian world, our congregation members
Right.
have dilemmas they come to us with, and they expect us to help them. But in the same situation, how can we help them, you know, as clergy, with their own ethical dilemma that they have?
Right.
And sometimes those ethical dilemmas that they bring to us fall in our laps, but sometimes we do nothing we can do to help them.
And sometimes that's the difficult part of being clergy is, you know, all we can do is sit on the sidelines and give advice. You know, ultimately, the final decision about what has to happen has to be that person's decision.
Correct.
You know, and all we can do is give them good and wholesome advice. And hope they make the right decision. Now, if it's something criminal, as long as they haven't revealed it in the confessional to me, I'm going to turn around and go to the cops about it.
Oh,
I
same here.
mean,
Same here.
if
It
Joe
could be good.
Blow walks up to me on the street and goes, "Hey, Padre, I just shot somebody,"
We're ethically bound to report it,
I'm going to the
and
cops.
people,
Screw it.
exactly, and the same, the same conundrum comes to us too. As a congregation member may come to us and say, "Hey, I have this problem," but there has to be a certain point too where you say, "It's your problem. Get yourself out of it. We can't involve ourselves in
Right.
that." Sometimes
Right.
too, sometimes those answers to for help we had to sometimes as clergy say no because some of those ethical problems we cannot involve ourselves in.
That's
You
really
know,
true.
it and at what point does like to talking to a fellow pastor here in my area, and she asked me, she says, we got into a discussion about ethics.
Right.
And we got into a discussion, I said to her, I said, "Well, at what point do you tell your congregation no that you can't help them? When do you cut them off? At what point?"
Right.
And she said, "Well, quite frankly, when it gets into, I try to give them advice about, like she said, she had a congregation that came, a member that came to her about cheating, and he
Right.
had been doing it for several years. It was like over a period of 30 years, of cheating. And he's and she said, at that point, she had to tell him, "Well, it's your mess. Clean it up." There was nothing she could do to help him.
Right.
What can you do as a clergy person or pastor? What can you do at that point to help somebody clean up 30 years worth of cheating on a spouse?
Well, and you know, therein lies the heart of the issue. 30 years of cheating on a spouse. You know, we're not talking about, oh, I went out and I got drunk one night and I had a one
Yeah,
night stand and
exactly.
now I need to try to clean this mess up. We're talking about a long-term, intentional
Action.
relationship
Yep.
with one or more people over 30 years. I mean, and at that point, that's when I tend to look at them and go, I don't know how you're going to clean this up. I mean, because I mean, this is not something that they accidentally did or something that just happened because of time and circumstance. This is something they intentionally did. You know, and so at a certain point, it's one of those you have to own up to your mistake
Correct.
and you have to take your lumps
And see
and.
that right there, and seeing there right there, the crux of the problem is owning up to your mistakes.
Right.
And
Right.
when do you get to that? How do you lead that congregation member to face the crux of the matter?
Well, and you see, that's another one of those situations where we as clergy have to understand two concepts. One, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make him drink.
Yeah, correct.
And number
Correct.
two, you cannot want that for them more than they want it. So if they are not willing to do the work, you can't want to help them more than they want to help themselves.
No, of course not. And I had to, me myself as a clergyman, even as a being a beginning priest when I was younger, I had to learn that the hard way. I always wanted more. I wanted it more than they did, and that was a heartbreaking experience for me.
Exactly.
And I
Exactly.
had to learn over the years, you can't always fix somebody else's moral or ethical dilemma.
Right.
Because down to the crux of it, it's not in the beginning, towards the end of it, you know the matter of it really? It's not your issue, it's their
Right.
issue.
Right. Melissa asks, how do you not say that a person is lying when they are? Their lie hurt that person in the church, so how can one ignore and not say anything?
Good
I
question.
don't think that we I mean, looking back on the event, it's been a few years now. We didn't really like ignore the lie, but what we did is we put out a fact-based statement that said, these are the facts, okay? This is the allegation. These are the facts. The facts don't support the allegation. And so it was one of those where we didn't come out and say the person lied, but by sharing and being transparent with the information, we were able to allow people to make a decision for themselves. Now, understand that report came out several weeks later, and many people had already left the church because of the rumor mill. And so there's not a lot you can do about the rumor mill early
No,
on, even
unfortunately.
though we continued to release statements all throughout it. We had to consistently say the investigation is still ongoing. And because of that, people got frustrated and left. The whole investigation was wrapped up in a few weeks' time, which is rather quick for both police and a church investigation. But people are so used today to watching cop shows on television where the whole story's wrapped up in an hour. Well, why couldn't you figure this all out in an hour, you know?
This is not Fresh 48, sorry.
Right. The process does not move the way it's shown in Hollywood. I mean,
Absolutely not. It doesn't.
you know. So, it takes time. And the clergy person was removed from their position until the investigation was over. So, I mean, there was no risk of, if it was true, of them, you know, hurting or abusing anyone else. But for some people, that wasn't enough. You know, they wanted a final answer yesterday. And unfortunately, that's not how the world works. You don't get a final answer yesterday. I mean, the police take their time. And so even them expediting it, you know, required still a couple of weeks for them to come to us and say, okay, we're done, you know. How did that person deal with the lie and the hurt? Not well at first.
I remember the president, the clergy president was very hurt. I remember that.
It was devastating for them, very devastating. And they actually, at my behest, began going to therapy to deal with some of that pain and anger and frustration. And because it's just as frustrating for them that, you know, this process takes time. You know, that's the hardest thing to hear when you're the one with your neck in the guillotine. I mean, is, you know, this takes time. And so they went to therapy and continue therapy to this day to deal with that. And they have moved on well since then.
Remember when you first brought me aboard, I remember an instance where I got accused of breaking the seal of confession. That took a little bit of investigation in itself too.
That took a few weeks to sort that out and ultimately found that to be a lie. Started
But
by
we
a
lost.
rival clergy person.
But we lost a few people because of that,
You
and the
know,
church never returned.
and it happens, you know. But Bishop Ben was cleared. Now that instance, there was no need to bring in the police because it was a church matter, not a secular matter. But it still took time to investigate. You know, we had to try to get witnesses to cooperate and talk with us. And, you know, the complainant was reluctant to share too much. And it's like, you made the complaint.
Exactly.
Now you're not willing to really discuss it any further, you know. And so ultimately it came down to it just didn't happen. I think the majority of clergy have at least one false allegation in their entire career at some point or another.
Exactly.
Whether it range from stealing money or breaking the seal of the confessional or breaking, especially in the Roman Church, breaking their vow of celibacy. That's a big one.
That's a big deal.
And that is routinely alleged of clergy in the Roman Church. Sometimes it's true. I mean, let's not sugarcoat it here. Sometimes it's true.
You know,
But sometimes it's
itself,
not.
and even in that instance, in itself, comes with its own ethical and moral dilemma in itself.
Right.
Because, yes, in a sense, it's a rule in the Roman Church; it's a man-made rule. And when the clergy gets caught up in that romantic relationship or physical relationship, it's like, what do you do with that now? You know, how do you alleviate the situation, but not create a bigger dilemma for the clergy person and the congregant or whoever it may be.
Right. Well, and of course, the ethical considerations, looking at it from a presiding bishop point of view, in the Roman Church, the ethical considerations are, number one, was it a congregant? Because if it
Exactly.
was a congregant, that changes the dynamic now. Did the priest exert undue influence upon a congregant to pull them into a romantic relationship? If it's someone outside of the parish, that's a little bit less of an issue. But unfortunately, in the Roman Church, they don't see a difference. It's all the same ethical dilemma to them. Right, Melissa. Yeah, the guilt would eat me up too if I were to lie about someone like that. It's not easy.
And see, Melissa has a good point there. And that comes down to somebody's morals and how their morals were built, how their ethics were instilled in them. Where did they learn their ethics and their morals from? From their parents, from their grandparents? You know, it all comes down to who instilled their values.
And there's another part to this too. I don't want to get into too much on the podcast, but there are mental health issues that a person may be going through that cause them to come up
You
with
have them.
scenarios that didn't happen.
Exactly.
There are situations where somebody has gotten themselves wrapped up in something and they feel that by projecting they can help alleviate the situation on themselves. There's a lot of different possibilities for why something like that happens. And again, that's why, we have to be very careful when we face those kinds of ethical dilemmas, that we are careful what we say in that moment. Because if it is somebody dealing with a mental health issue, we don't want to certainly stigmatize them. We don't want to damage them further. But by the same token, we also want to try to get them help too, if we can, to overcome whatever challenge they're facing. And so there's a lot of different pieces that come into play in some of these situations. Since Bishop Ben brought it up, I will share that the individual that made the allegation against Bishop Ben for breaking the seal of the confessional was a rival clergy person who had a history of using things like that to damage clergy that he didn't like. And so In that situation, there is something going on there behind the scenes.
Exactly. And the thing that bothered me is that person was supposed to be one of our trusted friends.
Right.
So the dilemma comes along with how to treat that supposed trusted friend. What do you do with that situation? How do you handle it? Do you handle it with a harsh attitude, or do you treat it with a long-handled spoon? Or do you just forgive and move on? And for me, for a little bit, I'm not gonna lie, for a little bit there, I was a little bit aggravated and perturbed. You know that. But I got to the point where I forgave the person, but I also treat them with a long-handled spoon now.
Right. They don't have that trusted status anymore, And I think that that's very true. And ultimately, in many cases, the best solution in situations like that are to put as much distance between you and the individual as possible. And unfortunately, that's not ideal either. I mean, you'd really like to help them, but sometimes you can't.
Exactly.
Sometimes they have to walk in that path themselves.
Exactly. So and that aspect turns into another corner as what do we use, what does scripture say about ethical dilemmas? And one comes to mind for me is John. John talks about the spirit of the truth when it comes to you. The spirit's going to always reveal something to you to show you the path. Or we could use like Peter, when you quoted for Peter.
Not
You
being
really have to
tossed about by
look.
every wind and wave
Exactly.
of dissension. And it really, I think Blackbird a moment ago said it well when he said that ethics should not get in the way of humanity. And I think that there's some truth to that too, in the fact
There is.
that, when we face these ethical dilemmas, the biggest part of what we have to look at is the humanity behind it. And for us in our church, the way we've dealt with it in the past is by taking into account all of the factors that go into this, whether it be true or false. And the church always has put a firm understanding that if we can help the person that's brought the allegation, again, whether true or false, then it is our responsibility to help them. Whether it be helping healing from what they've gone through or helping them find the help they need, if the allegation is not true, for whatever has facilitated or caused that kind of reaction. And so I think that it's important that we always remember the humanity that's involved in these situations. And
Oh, I do that 100%.
I think that it doesn't necessarily make it easier to deal with, but it certainly helps to maybe add some mitigation to it to understand that there are human things going on behind the scenes that we have to take into account. And we don't always know what everyone's going through in that moment in their life. And so we have to try to approach it with kindness and compassion and love so that, they feel that they are safe to talk to us while we still work to determine what's going on in the situation.
You covered it best when even Blackbird said, the right way. Sometimes as human beings, we let sometimes we tend to let our morals and our ethics get in the way of humanity. And you know, it's like you said right now, you know, how do we deal with that? You know, how do we not let that happen?
Right.
Do we, you know, we have to handle it with compassion. And sometimes those situations can be difficult where we don't want to have compassion, but it's important that we have compassion, because
Right.
if we don't have it, that's when we lose our humanity.
Right. Absolutely. No, I agree. And we understand the fact that, you know, most people who come to church, they've gone through quite a bit of stuff in their lives. In some regards, that's why they're there. They're seeking
Exactly.
help. They're seeking a solution. They're seeking guidance. And so we never quite know what the entire situation is unless we're willing to sit and listen.
Exactly.
And in
And so,
some.
sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say, so, you know, as we look at the situation, let's say that we had a congregation member or a seminarian come to us as a presiding bishop, what advice would you give to either one of those people to handle an ethical dilemma or dilemma that they're facing? What kind of advice and scripture would you give them to use?
Well, first of all, if they're coming to me for advice about going into the priesthood, I would say run. Run, run, run.
I hear you.
No, I say that tongue in cheek. I hope
Oh,
you don't,
yeah,
but
no, that makes sense.
I would remind them that even Jesus dealt with false allegations. You know, the whole thing taking him to Golgotha to the cross was all trumped up. It was all a kangaroo court to get him out of the way to dispatch with him. So there's no reason to think if they did that to Jesus that people wouldn't do that to us. I mean, it's going to happen. By the same token, my advice is always consistently the same, and that is mind your moral and ethical boundaries. And that's where most clergy fall into a problem, is they blur the line between congregant and friend or congregant and lover, and it ends up being then a very bad situation for them. And so I always remind them, mind your ethical and moral boundaries.
Exactly.
If you do that, 9 times out of 10, the chances are you will go through your entire career without a problem. But that said, anything can happen. So the other advice I give them is always be mindful of where you are and what you're doing. The good thing about many, like this allegation I spoke of, the clergy person had cameras at their home, cameras at their office, cameras at the church. You know, their time was accounted for almost down to the minute of where they were every moment of the day and night. So, there was a plethora of evidence that we could bring up and say, well, this did not happen. Okay.
Camera's not okay.
I'm on camera 90% of my life. I mean,
Yep.
you know, there are cameras all around my house, thanks to the trolls. And so people can know who's coming and going, when I've come and gone, where I've been. My phones are always with me, and the location services are always on because of my health issues, so that if something happens to me, say I collapse and I'm unconscious, I can be found. You know, if somebody says, oh, well, Bishop Greer was over here, you know, 20 miles away doing bad things to me, you know, we can pull up data and pull up, you know, camera data and say, no.
GPS location? Yeah.
No, he was nowhere near you, you know. And so I'm very careful about making sure that my time is accounted for. And I know where I am all hours of the day and night, so that things like that don't, can't take root, as it were.
And you know, the same token like that, I'm the same way, because, you know, my two congregation members I have now, the one lady, she always wants to be a friend. I want to be her friend so bad, but I tell her, you know, there's a line we can't cross.
Right.
They want me to go party with them, go to the nightclubs with them. And there's something that I can't do. No. I tell them, I can't be a fed the pastor if I'm going to be hanging out with you. You know, I do want, I am your friend, but there's a line I won't cross.
That's right. And that's the way it has to be. You know, I don't go to the clubs with any of my congregation.
It gets you in trouble real quick.
I go with Reverend Mark occasionally. Reverend Mark's not a congregant of mine. He's a colleague. I go to lunch with some of my colleagues. I will rarely go to lunch with a parishioner. I will only do that typically if it's one of those situations where they want to talk about something, mm-hmm. and I need to eat too. But I'll always suggest a public place.
Yes,
where we can go
too.
and eat. And typically I make it clear that it's either Dutch treat or the parish will pay for it in some cases.
Yep.
You know, things to kind of protect from, say, the Fannie Williams issues of, well, why did
right.
you spend this money? And,
mm-hmm.
you know,
see, a lot of people don't realize too, a lot of the people that, like, regular people in congregation, people don't wonder, they don't realize that there is a thing that we can't cross. And they're like, come on, pastor, why can't you do this? And they really don't understand until you sit down and really explain to them, this is why right. it is the way it is.
Right.
So we won't have issues.
Right. So, it makes it difficult sometimes, because people sometimes get their feelings hurt.
Yep, they sure do.
Because, you know, we won't fraternize in a way that they feel that we should. And I use that word knowing full well, you know. What it means and how it, the connotation it has. But we have to protect them. We have to protect ourselves,
correct.
Protect the church. So there's a lot that goes into that. We deal with ethical dilemmas every single day as clergy. And you wonder why clergy always look exhausted.
mm-hmm.
This is why. Because those are the things that weigh on us and are in our minds. Bishop Ben, your final thoughts, my friend.
Well, you know, my thought is, you know, it comes down to the ethical dilemmas. The key important thing is to handle it correctly, approach it with a calm, cool, collective attitude. And to sit back and actually handle it correctly and go through the proper channels, and everything will work out.
Right. Thank you, Bishop Ben.
Thank you.
And I think, like I said a few minutes ago, you know, don't, as Blackbird said, don't let your ethical dilemmas get in the way of humanity either.
Amen. Amen.
You know, we are human, working with human beings. And sometimes we have to take that into account. Sometimes we have to do hard things because that's what the situation requires. It's what a situation requires. And so we just remember that as you go about your daily lives. And our final thought from Melissa, because it's such a good thought. Melissa says, I feel a bishop and priest shouldn't be friends and buds the people there leading to God, because I feel lines will cross. Agreed.
Agreed,
100%.
100%. Yep, me
And
too.
that's why we have to be so very, very careful. That's very succinct, and I appreciate that, Melissa. Well, folks, that brings us to the end of this podcast. Thank you, Bishop Ben, for being here tonight.
Thank you for allowing me to be on the show again. I really appreciate it.
Anytime. And don't have a topic for next week yet, but when we do, we will post it on all of our regular places, facebook.com/expandingyourfaith, and in our Discord and other places. So keep an eye out for that. But until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright, my friends. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on expanding your faith, check us out on facebook.com/expandingyourfaith. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.